Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rounding Third Sports. I'm your host, Steve, and we're going to get started. Today, we are going to talk a little bit more about the NBA playoffs. So, obviously, we are just about done now with the first round, with there being only one game left, and starting the semifinals. So, we'll talk about the results there. We'll talk about what to look for in terms of the second round, the conference semifinals. And I'll give my predictions for this round as well. We're also going to talk just briefly about the NFL. One topic, and that's a trade scenario, I guess. We're going to look at the destination potentials for one player in the NFL, which is pretty much the talk of the NFL right now. And then most likely after the break, we will jump over to baseball. So of course we will do our weekly standings update, look at who would be in the playoffs if the season ended today. We're going to look at this day in history. There's a few, I won't go as in depth as I did last week with reading all of it, but there are a few that I thought were actually pretty interesting that I wanted to mention on the podcast today. And then we will close out today doing a live voting of, I guess we can call it live. I'm going to do my first vote of the MLB All-Star Game. So we'll go through what the ballot looks like for it, and I will make my picks. So we are going to start today with talking about, as I said, we're going to talk about the NFL, and we're going to look at one player. His name is Julio Jones, wide receiver currently with the Falcons, and we are going to look and see some potential landing spots for him. So obviously he's made it known he wants out of Atlanta. He wants to go to I'm guessing here that he's going to want to go to a contender. That would make the most sense. So we're going to look at where he might go. So there are seven teams that are listed here, and I'll include an eighth because there's one that's not on here that's actually been the topic of discussion for most of this. So the first one, this is in no specific order. So I'll give you the teams, we'll talk about the scenario, and I'll give you my thoughts on it. So the first team is the New England Patriots. They've got just under $16 million in cap space available. Their top receivers right now are Jacoby Myers, Nelson Agholor, and Kendrick Bourne. So there's a fit there for a wide receiver like Julio Jones. Obviously, they are in need of a number one wide receiver. And obviously, you know, we can discuss Julio Jones's injury potential, and we could talk about just his durability over the last, you know, pretty much over his career. But despite that, he is still a true number one wide receiver. Think about the scenario here with the Patriots. So they've got Cam Newton as their starting quarterback. They've got Mac Jones coming up behind him, could potentially see playing time this season. So you look at a guy like Mac Jones trying to prove himself and come up with the Patriots and take over the starting spot. And then you look at what receiving core he would have, and that leaves a lot to be desired. Jacoby Myers, Nelson Agholor, Kendrick Bourne. There's no true number one on that list. And so to have a guy like Julio Jones would be phenomenal for him. Now, there's talk that Julio would like to play with Cam Newton. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. Obviously, they have a history a little bit. You know, Cam coming from the Panthers and Julio with the Falcons, but I don't know. I don't know how much of a, I mean, obviously it's a good fit I just don't know if are the Patriots, the way I've heard it talked, is the team that is going to ultimately trade for him are pretty much Julio Jones away from making the Super Bowl or winning the Super Bowl even. And you asked me, are the Patriots a Julio Jones away from the Super Bowl? And I don't know that I could say yes to that. I know the Patriots made a lot of moves this season or this offseason, added a lot of players. I just don't know if Julio is going to be what puts them into the Super Bowl. The next team, which I'm just going to come right off the bat and say I see no fit here, and that's the Arizona Cardinals. They do have $13.5 million in cap space, but let's look at their receiving core. They've got DeAndre Hopkins. They've got who's still a top wide receiver in the league. They've got A.J. Green, who is injury prone now, still can be a very reliable wide receiver. And then their third is Andy Isabella. I don't see a fit for Julio Jones with a guy like DeAndre Hopkins and A.J. Green both there. Both are going to want the ball. Both are going to see playing time. So I just don't think it makes sense to add Julio Jones. What they talk about, Kyler Murray being one of the shortest quarterbacks in football, it would help to have an elite trio of tall wideouts. You know, A.J. Green, DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, all tall wide receivers. So that would be a big help to him. And I would say Jones is far superior than A.J. Green at this point. But I don't know. I don't think that's a good fit for him. Next is the San Francisco 49ers. Now, this one is intriguing. You look at their cap space, $17.6 million. Their top receivers right now, a young Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and Mohamed Sanu. So you've got a mix of young and younger and veteran. So Julio would not only provide another veteran presence, but he would be a true number one there. You have Kyle Shanahan over there. So obviously he knows how to use Julio Jones coming from Atlanta. And now they've got Trey Lance, who has a strong arm and could easily throw in the range for Julio to catch it. I think that could be a really good fit. I would say so far San Francisco would be the top choice there, with the Patriots being number two. All right, the next one I'm also going to say a no for, that's the Cleveland Browns. I have not heard anything about that being a fit. The Browns do have just under $21 million in cap space, but they've got Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, and Donovan Peoples-Jones. I don't see there being a fit here. Beckham, a lot like Julio, is injured frequently. The Browns are a playoff team, but I don't think going out and getting Julio is the wise choice for them at this point. More than the Browns being a fit for Julio, I don't think Julio is a fit for the Browns. I think the Browns need to use that money on a position they truly need, because you do have Beckham when he's, you do have OBJ when he's healthy, and you do have Jarvis Landry. So I don't see spending the money on another wide receiver there. All right, this next one, the Indianapolis Colts. I think that could be a good fit. Right around $20.5 million in cap space. Top receivers, T.Y. Hilton, Michael Pittman, and Paris Campbell. So again, some veteran and some young. They've got Carson Wentz over there as their starting quarterback this year. A guy who had a lot of upside. I think the injuries really affected his career path, but I think he could easily revise his career. Revive his career. Being there to complement T.Y. Hilton and Michael Pittman would help Wentz to maybe show his true potential again. But I could see Indianapolis being a good fit for him. Now, as far as being a Super Bowl, a Julio Jones away from a Super Bowl? I don't know. So I will leave them at third so far. Still leave San Francisco as the top choice, the Patriots number two, and I'll put the Colts at number three. Next one is the New York Jets. I don't see that being a fit strictly because the Jets are not contenders. And the same thing with the Jaguars. Those are the other two teams listed on here. Neither of them are going to be – neither of them are a Julio Jones away from a Super Bowl. So not going to consider them in this. The other team that is mentioned – or that wasn't mentioned in that article that, you know, there's a lot of rumors around is Seattle. Obviously having Russell Wilson at quarterback, having DK Metcalf is a huge help at wide receiver. Julio Jones could be a really good fit out there. So I would say I don't know. I feel like Seattle and San Francisco would both be very good destinations for him. I feel like San Francisco might get the edge strictly because of having Kyle Shanahan there. You know, that chemistry that they already have together is what's going to help Julio. So, you know, he wants to play for a contender, one, but he wants to play for a quarterback who's going to have a big arm and is going to be able to hit him. Russell Wilson can do that. Trey Lance can do that. Cam Newton could do that. Mac Jones, I think, could probably do that. Carson Wentz is iffy. So I would say San Francisco number one, Seattle number two, and the Patriots number three. And I wouldn't be – obviously I don't want to see him leave Atlanta, being a big Falcons fan. But if he was going to, I would much rather him go to San Fran or Seattle than see him go to the Patriots. And that's just because I'm just not a big Patriots fan. But I think those would be good fits for him. And San Francisco, I think, would be an outstanding fit for him. Okay, so let's move over to the NBA. Let's talk first-round results, and then let's talk about what's coming up in the conference semifinals. So we'll start out west. We'll start out west. Obviously, there's still one game to go. As game seven will be tomorrow, for the 4-seed Clippers and the 5-seed Dallas Mavericks. So over in the West with the 1-seed Utah against the 8-seed Memphis, Utah won in 5 games, 4-1. Denver, the number 3 seed against Portland, the number 6 seed, Denver wins 4-2, and the Suns pulled off the win against the Lakers, 4-2. So both of the teams that were in the NBA Finals last year, Miami and the Lakers, are now out. And we will see a new champion crowned this season. Over on the East, Philly beats Washington in 5 games. Atlanta beat the Knicks in 5 games. So that was the one that I said that could go any possible way. There was really no good feel for that game and how it was going to end up. And Trae Young really showed his superstar potential. Milwaukee sweeps the Heat, and Brooklyn beats Boston in 5. So, as we go to the conference semifinals, that puts the East with the 76ers against the Hawks, the 1-5 seed. The Nets as the 2 seed, hosting the Bucks as the 3 seed. And then over in the West, Utah will face the winner of the Clippers-Mavs game. And then Phoenix, the 2 seed, hosts Denver, the 3 seed. So let's look at the matchups that we have here. So obviously in the Eastern Conference, I feel like this round is going to be a lot different than the first round. First round, no game made it past 5 games. you know, three of them were 4-1. The other one was a sweep. So there wasn't really any competition there. Now we get to the conference semifinals, and we've got some big matchups here. You have the Hawks as really the underdog here against the 1-seed 76ers, but now we have Joel Embiid day-to-day with a knee injury. So could they pull off the upset there? And then we have the big, really the big fight feel for this other matchup in the Bucks and Nets. Two-time MVP Giannis against the big three of the Brooklyn Nets. Over in the Western Conference, you got the Suns against the Nuggets. That'll be an intriguing matchup, just to see how those two teams' dynamic plays off against each other. And then again, Utah facing the other team, whether it be Dallas or the Clippers. So let's look at Brooklyn and Milwaukee first. So Brooklyn has the top ranked offense, but the 22nd ranked defense, which again does not surprise me. Harden has never been known for his defense. Durant and Kyrie aren't terrible on defense. I'd say Kyrie is probably their top defensive guy, but I mean, I'm not surprised that they have the 22nd ranked defense. Milwaukee has the 5th ranked offense and the 9th ranked defense. So that's where this is going to be a very interesting matchup to see how they match up, how they face off against each other. So the big question for this series, can Brooklyn handle Milwaukee's size advantage? So obviously the big three of Kyrie, James Harden, Kevin Durant, you know, Harden and Kyrie are both guards. Durant is I think he's technically classified as a power forward, but I mean, the dude is all bone. There's not a lot there. So they don't have a lot of size. Milwaukee has their three of Giannis, Chris Middleton, and Drew Holiday. So it'll be intriguing to see how they match up. I would say probably having Drew Holiday guarding Kyrie and then having Chris Middleton guarding Harden. And then Giannis. I mean, Giannis is most likely going to be on Durant, but I mean, I have a feeling Durant's going to lose that battle. So the Nets went small against Boston. And it was obvious because Tristan Thompson really controlled the rebounds, controlled the board and the whole inside. And compare that to the Brooklyn Nets big man, which is Brook Lopez. It's going to create a lot of issues, plus Giannis' size. It'll be interesting to see how Brooklyn handles that size disadvantage. I will agree that this series could become a classic. There's going to be a lot of moving parts, a lot of changes happening, and a lot of just like a lot of movements, just trying to see what's going to work, what's going to click in each game, really. So my prediction for this game is I think the Nets will win it, but I think it's going to go 7 games. I think it'll go all 7 because and the sole reason is because of Milwaukee's size. Now, if something happens and Milwaukee's size is taken care of and controlled, I could see it going 6 games. I don't see it going less than 6, but I actually see it going a full 7 with the Nets winning. All right, the 76ers and the Hawks. So we have The 76ers with the 13th ranked offense, the 2nd ranked defense, Atlanta with the 9th ranked offense, and the 18th ranked defense. So this will be an interesting matchup. Odds. The odds for the Brooklyn-Milwaukee game is Brooklyn 70% to 30%. So 70% chance of winning. And for the 76ers-Hawks, it's actually Philadelphia has 87% versus Atlanta's 13%. The big key here is, one, who scores for Philly? And can Trae Young be stopped? So, against Washington, Tobias Harris averaged 25 points, 10 rebounds. Ben Simmons nearly averaged a triple-double. Obviously, with Embiid having this injury, they're going to need Harris to step up even more. And then the big thing will be for Simmons to figure it out at the free throw line. That's where he struggled last series. But the big question is, who is going to stop Trae Young? The dude was lights out against the Knicks. So it'll be interesting to see who faces him, who guards him. My prediction for this will be Philadelphia wins in five games. I'll go six games. I'll go Philly wins in six, because I think Atlanta wins probably both two home games. Yeah, so we'll have Philadelphia in six, Brooklyn in seven. So that'll leave a conference final matchup of Brooklyn against Philadelphia. All right, over in the Western Conference, the Suns and Nuggets. The Suns have the 7th ranked offense and the 6th ranked defense. The Nuggets have the 6th ranked offense and the 11th ranked defense. And this is actually a 60-40% odds, with Phoenix having the 60. The big series key here, a star-driven showdown. So Devin Booker, Nikola Jokic. That's a big-time matchup. And, of course, they're not going to be guarding each other, but it'll be interesting to see how they match up here. I don't know that anybody really in the NBA can guard Devin Booker, per se. So the Nuggets will probably throw multiple people at him, traps, double teams, everything else to try to slow him down. But on the other side, you know, Jokic isn't a single coverage kind of guy either. DeAndre Ayton will be guarding him, but that's going to be a big task for him. Denver's going to need their role players to really step up here and really handle a lot of the workload. Because they're going to need somebody besides Jokic to really win this series. Let's see. My prediction for this one, I think, do I go with Booker or do I go with Jokic? I'm going to go with the Suns. I'm going to go a full seven games, though. Yeah, I'm going to go with the Suns in seven. And then the final game will be Utah against either the Clippers or the Mavericks. I believe Utah wins that in six games. The big thing there, Donovan Mitchell. And then you'll either have Luka or you'll have Kawhi. So I think Utah wins, no matter which team it is, Utah wins in six. So we will see how that goes. Could be good, could be bad. I don't really know. But definitely an interesting playoff dynamic here. Still a lot of superstars out there, just not our usual suspects. So for once, we don't have LeBron. We don't have Curry. We don't have Dwayne Wade, obviously. But we've got guys like Luka, potentially, Kawhi, potentially. We've got, you know, these new younger guys, Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell, Nikola Jokic. And then that's all in the West. And then over in the East, you've got Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, barring the injury issue. You still have Durant. Kyrie's back in there. And we've got James Harden again. So those three aren't new to the playoffs. And then you've got Giannis, who's been this far before. And you've got Trae Young, who's an up-and-comer. So definitely intriguing matchups. It's going to be interesting to see who it is that pulls it out this year. Me personally, I've never been a big LeBron guy. So I'm not upset to see him out of it. But we'll see how the playoffs go. All right, I know I'm a couple minutes early. I'm going to go ahead and take a break. When I come back, I'm going to jump straight into baseball. We're going to talk this day in history. We're going to talk, of course, our MLB standings, and then I will do my All-Star game selections for the starting batters. Stay tuned. Welcome back, and we are going to jump right back into MLB, just like I said. So let's go some this day in history. Today in baseball history, it's June 5th. That is today, June 5th. And I want to run through some of these. Some of these are, listen, if you go to nationalpastime.com, that's where I get this information from. There's literally a list of this day in history. So to give you a number, just in case you're wondering how many there were to look at today, 51 facts were found for this day in history. Now, I am not going to go, I know, I'm not going to go through all 51. I could hear the sighs out there. Oh my goodness, he's going to read 51 of these. No, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to put you to sleep that quickly. But no, I have done the work on that and gone through all 51 myself, and picked out, I think I have eight. I've got less than 10. So, you know, it's not terrible. Now some of these are interesting, just not really anything to talk about on this podcast. But if you're curious, at what happened today in baseball, and more so than what I give here in a second, go to nationalpastime.com. You can literally go to any date. So if you're curious what happened on your birthday, it'll tell you. If you're looking at if you want to know just for one specific team, you can look at one specific team and it'll tell you what happened on this day in history for that team. Okay, so this day in history, June 5th, we are going to start, we're going to go all the way back to 1949. And this one I wanted to read because it was kind of a little humorous here at the end. But it says, in a game that was put on pause by rain and fans, Boston drops into second place when the team loses to the Cardinals 8-1 at Braves Field. After an hour and 23-minute stoppage of play after the second inning due to heavy showers, 7 fans refused to leave the field, adding to the delay until the umpires threatened to forfeit the game to St. Louis. So already having almost an hour and a half of a delay because of heavy rain, now you have 7 fans who are hanging out on the field and refusing to leave. And so it doesn't give me how long it took for the fans to finally get off the field, but it took the umpires threatening to forfeit the game. Now, Boston went on to lose anyway, but a straight-out loss is probably better looking than a forfeit, especially back in 1949. We wouldn't have that today. You know, I was talking about this with a couple buddies when we were at the Reds game a couple of weeks ago. We talked about, and this has probably been, man, this has probably been 12, 15 years ago, maybe, that we were at a Reds game, and in one game, two different fans had ran onto the field and both got tased. Like, it wasn't a long, drawn-out process. It was fan jumps on, runs across the outfield, gets to center, the second one at least, gets to center field, you see the light coming from the taser. So, quick work. of course, the Reds, if you've never been to their stadium, they've got police officers in both bullpens, I believe, as well as in both dugouts. So, both bullpens are in the outfield, one's in center field, one's in right field. And then, of course, the dugouts are right there by home plate. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, there's at least one police officer in both bullpens as well as both dugouts. Really for that purpose. Plus, you have all the security guards that are around as well. There might be more than that, but there's at least that much. So something like that happening today is just unheard of. All right, let's go all the way now to 1982. Cal Ripken, Baltimore Orioles. Cal Ripken's span of 8,243 consecutive innings begins with the Orioles' 3-1 victory over Minnesota at the Metrodome. So today, June 5th, 1982, Cal Ripken's consecutive inning streak started. And it would not end. It would last for 904 games. That's a minimum of 9 innings for 904 games. It ends when he is lifted in the 8th inning for a pinch runner during an 18-3 September loss to the Blue Jays in 1987. So 5 years and 3 months that streak lasted. Think about that. We can't think about players anymore playing a full season, 162 games, much less doing it for 5 years and 3 months, 904 games. It's unheard of and crazy. All right, let's go a few more years to 1987. This one I had to read just because it's bizarre. Before the Mets-Pirates game at Shea Stadium, Spider-Man marries Mary Jane Watson. In attendance at the wedding ceremony, presided over by Marvel Comics president Stan Lee, are Spidey's friends Captain America and the Hulk, as well as his enemies Dr. Doom and the Green Goblin. So, really, the only thing it had to do with baseball is it was before a baseball game at Shea Stadium. But, yeah, there you go. Spider-Man got married in 1987. So, pretty sure for you Marvel fans out there, Tom Holland was not even alive in 1987. So that's your current Spider-Man. Actually, Tobey Maguire might not have even been born in 1987. So there you go. All right, let's move forward a few more years to 1992. At Three River Stadium, Mets first baseman Eddie Murray drives in 2 runs, passing Mickey Mantle as the all-time RBI leader among switch hitters. So all-time RBI leader for switch hitters, Eddie Murray passes Mickey Mantle for the top spot in 1992. All right, a few more years, 1997. In a 14-6 rout of the Tigers in Detroit, Alex Rodriguez becomes the first Mariner to hit for the cycle in a 9-inning game. So the first Mariner to hit for the cycle in a 9-inning game, Alex Rodriguez against the Tigers in Detroit. In 1993, so 4 years earlier, Jay Buhner accomplished the feat with a 14th inning triple at the Kings Dome. So Buhner hit for the cycle, just it was in 14 innings. A-Rod was able to do it in 9. All right, let's go forward a few more years to 2006. This one is one of my favorites, just because of who's involved. But Red slugger Ken Griffey Jr., who has homered in every existing ballpark, hits a round tripper in his 43rd ballpark to tie the major league record of Fred McGriff. Junior goes deep twice in the new Busch Stadium, including a ninth inning three-run game winner off Jason Isringhausen in Cincinnati's 8-7 victory over the Redbirds. So that's interesting. A guy in Griffey who has homered in all current existing stadiums hit a home run in his 43rd ballpark. That's just a little neat fact there. All right, let's go a couple more years to 2008. Joining Mickey Mantle and Eddie Murray, Chipper Jones becomes the third switch hitter in Major League history to hit 400 career home runs. The milestone home run is just one of his four hits he contributed to Atlanta's 7-5 comeback win over Florida. So Chipper Jones, my all-time favorite baseball player, Atlanta Braves third baseman, switch hitter, was the third switch hitter in Major League history to hit 400 home runs. Again, that's another thing that's really not common nowadays. One, I mean, switch hitters are, but to have the power is pretty unheard of. A lot of them are more of speed guys. All right, and the last one is a combination of 2001 and 2012. So in 2001, the Mets drafted David Wright in the first round. So June 5th, 2001, David Wright was drafted. Now, fast forward 11 years. On the 11th anniversary of being drafted by the Mets, David Wright becomes the franchise's all-time run scorer when he crosses the plate for the 736th time after homering in the team's 7-6 loss in Washington. 29 years old, was already the franchise career leader in doubles, total bases, RBIs, and extra base hits. So that's pretty neat, just the fact that it happened on the same day anniversary of him being drafted by the team. He becomes the team's all-time run scorer. All right, so that's going to do it for this day in history, baseball history. Okay, let's look at the standings. So, again, if you've never listened to my podcast before, this is something I've done every week of the Major League Baseball season. I look at the standings and I track who, if the season ended as of the current standings, what would the playoffs look like? And if there is a tie, I use runs scored as my tiebreaker. Okay? So, last week, Tampa and San Diego had the number one overall seeds. And so let's see who has it this week. And actually, in the American League, Tampa is still the number one seed. So that's back-to-back weeks for them. The two seed is the White Sox, with Oakland still being the three seed. So top three don't change this week. Wild card, the Red Sox are the first wild card. And here's where the change will come. The second wild card actually goes to Houston. So Boston would face Houston. All right, let's go over to the National League. And the Giants are back up at the number one seed. So just a little history there. That is, I think, four of the last 6 weeks that San Francisco has had the top seed in the National League. The only other two teams that have held it in the past 6 weeks, St. Louis held it for a week. And San Diego got it last week for the first time. So the Giants have it this week. That puts the Cubs against the Mets. So there's another change, and the Cubs finally make the playoff. So the Cardinals have pretty much held that down for the last several weeks in the East, and they're actually now third in the division. And the Mets have been the three seed for a good amount of time now. All right, the wild card teams. So the Padres are the number one wild card, and they would face the Dodgers still in the wild card matchup. All right, so looking at this, I'm going to go with, I can't really vote against Tampa right now just because they're so hot. So I'm going to go with Tampa in the World Series for the American League. And I think I'm still going to go with the Padres from the National League. So that's the third week in a row, actually, that I've picked San Diego from the National League. But I have a hard time voting against them right now, really. So there you have it. That's week 9 of the MLB season and what the playoffs look like. So that brings us to the final thing that I'm going to do tonight. And that is I'm going to vote on the All-Star ballot. So as soon as my website reloads, because it just gave me a white screen, we will go through each position for both leagues. And maybe. There we go. Okay. So to kind of give an explanation in case you've never voted on, which actually there's a whole new process here. So there's two phases of this, apparently. I'm reading this right now for the first time. So there's two phases to this. Phase one goes through June 24th, and that they're calling that Help Your Favorites Advance. Phase two then, which will be June 28th through July 1st, will be vote for the starters. Okay, we'll see how that what happens there. So how this goes is we vote for one player from each position, except for outfield. Outfield, we vote for three, obviously, and then we vote for a DH. I thought it was just in the National League, so I'll have to see how that goes. But okay, so let's look at first base. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go through here and I will give you, I'll try to give you the top three and then I'll talk about who I'm going to vote for. So we're going to start with the American League first base. We'll go position by position. So first base first, we'll start in the American League. Obviously, Vlad Jr. has .338 average, league leading 18 home runs, 47 RBIs, 1.111 OPS. Really, I can't even not vote for him. So going any further is going to be pretty pointless. But I will say that the others that are up here, Jaiman Choi with Tampa Bay is batting .304 with a .970 OPS. And Yuli Gurriel for the Astros has a .314 average and a .904 OPS. And glancing down through here, I mean, Matt Olson, 14 home runs, .933 OPS. But yeah, I'm going to vote for Vlad Guerrero here. He's definitely well-deserving of that first base slot. Now, over in the National League, we have Colin Moran batting .297, 4 home runs, 19 RBIs, 821 OPS. Max Muncy only has a .265 average, but has 13 home runs, 30 RBIs, and .955 OPS. And then, really, the National League's first basemen are kind of not very good. So we are going to go with Max Muncy here. He's got the highest OPS, the most home runs, the most RBIs, second most RBIs, third most RBIs. But yeah, we're going to go with Max Muncy for the National League first baseman. All right, moving on to second base. So same thing here. Jose Altuve is batting 306 with an 834 OPS. Nick Madrigal is batting 300 with a 759 OPS. Really, it's between those two. And Marcus Semien, 299 average, 908 OPS, 13 home runs, 32 RBIs. Actually, yeah, I'm going to go with Marcus Semien for the Blue Jays. All right, in the National League, Ozzie Albies is batting 256 with 9 home runs, 34 RBIs, and 831 OPS. Let's scroll through here. Adam Frazier has a 335 average, 871 OPS. Yeah. I would say it would be between Ozzie Albies and Adam Frazier. Frazier leads in average and OPS. And Albies leads in home runs and RBIs. So they split it 2-2. So I am actually going to... I'm going to go with the popular vote here and vote for Ozzie Albies. Main reason there, he plays for the Braves. So that's my tiebreaker in that situation. There's no statistical reason for it other than I prefer the Braves over the Pirates. All right, third base. Alex Bregman, 284 average, 802 OPS. Rafael Devers, 279 average, 942 OPS. So he's definitely up there. Yoan Moncada, 299 average, 865 OPS. Yeah, I think Rafael Devers actually is the smart choice here, statistics-wise. 15 home runs, 46 RBIs, 942 OPS. All right, in the National League for third baseman, Chris Bryant is at a 316 average, 13 home runs, 38 RBIs, 1.004 OPS. J.D. Davis, 390 average, a 1.089 OPS. I think he just got called up, though. So I think those numbers are skewed, and they will probably come back down. Austin Riley, a 301 average, 10 home runs, 25 RBIs, 902 OPS. It's a shame that those numbers aren't going to get the vote here. Have an above 300 average, an above 0.90 OPS, double-digit home runs, 20-plus RBIs. But Chris Bryant can't be ignored here. 316 average and a 1.004 OPS. That's got to be the choice. All right, shortstop. Xander Bogaerts has a 315 average, a 0.912 OPS, 10 home runs, 33 RBIs. Carlos Correa, 286. Bogaerts would get the pick over Carlos Correa. Let's just glance down through here real quick to make sure I'm not missing somebody. Ooh, Adalberto Mondesi, a 360 average and 1.080 OPS. But again, 2 home runs, 5 RBIs. That's not enough to really get my attention here. I mean, realistically, should he get the nod? Probably, but I think those numbers are skewed. And so I'm going to go with Bogaerts here. All right, in the National League, these averages are abysmal. So it comes down to Fernando Tatis or Trey Turner. Tatis leads in 3 of the 4 categories. So Trey Turner has a 311 average. Tatis has 297. But Tatis has 17 homers, 39 RBIs, a 1.072 OPS. That gets my vote instantly. All right, catcher in the American League. Scrolling down through here, Salvador Perez, 279 average, 14 homers, 40 RBIs, 0.826 OPS. most likely is going to get the vote here. Yeah, there's nobody else even really close statistics wise. The only other ones that are have a below 2.25 average. So we'll give it to Salvador Perez. All right, in the National League, Tucker Barnhart's got a 272 average and a 785 OPS. It's not terrible. Carson Kelly, 271 average, 0.887 OPS, 7 home runs, 23 RBI. So he would get the pick there. Yadier actually beats him out. Omar Narvaez, a 317 average and a 916 OPS. But then you got Buster Posey. 321 average, 10 home runs, 21 RBIs, 974 OPS. Yeah, Buster Posey gets the vote here. All right, outfield. So in the outfield, again, we select the top three, or we select three players per league. So let's look at average first. So Michael Brantley has an above 300. Byron Buxton has a 370. Teoscar Hernandez is a 308. Cedric Mullins is a 311. Trout has a 333. That's it. So five guys have over a 300 average. Now let's look at these guys and see where they stand in the rest of their statistics. Brantley has 3 home runs, 15 RBIs, and an 802 OPS. That's going to eliminate him. Buxton has 9 home runs, 17 RBIs, and a 1.180 OPS. He instantly is going to get one of the spots. That's for sure. So I'm down to 3 guys for 2 spots. But there's another one I wanted to look at here because I didn't. Yeah, Aaron Judge is at 294, but he's got 14 home runs, 31 RBIs, and a 938 OPS. So if I compare him to Hernandez, Judge actually gets – I'm going to eliminate Hernandez here. So Judge has – so I'm still at 3 guys, Judge, Trout, and – I don't remember the third one now, Cedric Mullins. So Judge gets it over Mullins as well. So I'm going to go ahead and give Judge a spot. So the last spot comes down to Cedric Mullins and Mike Trout. Now obviously, I know Mike Trout's hurt, but we're still going to look at this. Yeah, 333 average, 1.090 OPS, 8 home runs, 18 RBIs. Being hurt, he still has 3 of the 4 numbers better than Cedric Mullins, and he's same amount of home runs. So I'm going to give it to Mike Trout. All right, that means we can go over to the National League now. Same thing. Let's look at see who has over a 300 average. Nick Castellanos, a 368. I'm telling you now, I'm going to go ahead and put him on there because he's got a 1.066 OPS as well. So I have 2 spots left. Trent Grisham, a 301 average. Ketel Marte, 381 average. Starling Marte, 304 average. Brandon Nimmo. Nope, I'm not even going to count Brandon Nimmo. He doesn't have enough other stats to really warrant me voting for him. Jesse Winker, a 342 average. So, I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to give another Red a spot. So, Jesse Winker gets another one. So, I'm going to have 3 guys for 1 spot. So, let me go back up here. So, Starling Marte, Ketel Marte, and Trent Grisham. So, Ketel Marte has the average. Grisham has the home runs. Marte and Grisham have the RBIs. And Marte has – okay, I'm going to give it to Ketel Marte. Yeah. All right. Designated hitter. National League does not have a designated hitter, so it's going to be American League only. JD Martinez, 321 average. Oh, I didn't even realize Shohei Ohtani was on here as a DH. So here's the thing. They actually split the stat categories, JD Martinez and Shohei Ohtani. Martinez has the average. Ohtani has the home runs and RBIs. And Martinez has the OPS. I think Ohtani will probably get in as a pitcher, but I'm still going to choose him as the batter because I would love to see in the All-Star game him play both sides, pitcher and fielder or hitter. I think that'd be amazing. So there you have it. There is my entry. So again, just to go over this real quick, because I'm down to my last minute. The American League, Vlad Guerrero, Marcus Semien, Rafael Devers, Xander Bogaerts, Salvador Perez, Byron Buxton, Aaron Judge, Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani. In the National League, Max Muncy, Ozzie Albies, Chris Bryant, Fernando Tatis Jr., Buster Posey, Nick Castellanos, Ketel Marte, and Jesse Winker. And can I change this? Yes, I'm actually going to change Ketel Marte. I'm going to change it to Ronald Acuna Jr. because he's got the 17 home runs. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Check out my Instagram, Rounding Third Sports. Drop me a comment. Drop me a like. Let me know what you think. And I will be back again next week. Have a great week, everybody.